This is your life, episode 16.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be?
Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the how of wow. If you're going to be successful in getting the attention of the market you want to reach, you're going to need to start with something remarkable, something extraordinary. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about what wow is and how you can create it by answering five questions. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE Launch and Platform Conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. You can find out more information at dynamiccommunicators.com. Before I get into this episode, I thought I'd give you a little report from Blog World last week. Man, it was a busy week. I was in Northwest Arkansas on Tuesday speaking to some mortgage bankers about the benefit of building platforms for small business and for the kind of business that they're in. And then I flew to New York to attend the Book Expo America and Blog World, which were held in conjunction with one another in New York City at the Javits Center. But I got to see several friends, which was a blast. Chris Brogan and Craig Jarrow and Cliff Ravenscraft, who graciously invited me to speak at Blog World this year. Andy Traub and Clay Hebert, just to mention a few. But I met a lot of new friends as well. It was really, really a lot of fun. I think conferences are great just for the networking opportunities. I also had a first, which was I signed my audiobook, the audiobook version of Platform, in the Oasis booth. They are the publisher of the book, and I'd never signed an audiobook before, but as it turns out, it's not that difficult. They just pull the jacket out of the audio case and you sign that. So who knew? At any rate, I also spoke on Thursday on the topic of platform, and that was a lot of fun because I was with people who either blog for a living or who would like to blog for a living or in some way are in that process of becoming a professional blogger. So, man, I just love being around people that are doing the same kind of thing that I'm doing and who have a desire for excellence and have paid their way to come to a conference like that to improve their skills. So awesome. The only regret I have is that I really didn't get to spend any time on the exhibit floor, which, man, I was so looking forward to that. I love to just explore the new technologies that are coming out and see which of those would be appropriate for my blog or for a podcast, but didn't get a chance to do that. So hopefully next year. At any rate, I also did several interviews while I was in New York, including one with the New York Times, which was really fun, really connected with a reporter there who is a blogger and totally gets blogging, and also with the Washington Times. So anyway, that was a fun but busy week, and it was great to get home to my bride, to Gail, on Thursday evening. So let's talk about the how of wow. If you've read my new book, Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World, you know that the first section of the book is called Start with Wow. It's the first step in building a platform. Why? Well, I've said this on the podcast before because it's something that David Ogilvy said two generations ago. He said, great marketing only makes a bad product fail faster. And it's true. In other words, the purpose of marketing is to prime the pump. But if people aren't wowed by your product and want to use it, they're not going to recommend it to their friends. In other words, you're not going to get the word of mouth promotion that you need to get in order to be successful. You can't spend enough money or be clever enough to overcome a lack of word of mouth in marketing. It just won't work. You'll be, just dead in the water. This is especially true in the world of social media because it accelerates the word of mouth process, really because of two facts. One, everyone now has a megaphone. And number two, everyone is connected to everyone else. And this is probably the most dramatic in the movie business, where a movie can open on Friday and be dead by Sunday if it doesn't open well and if it doesn't get that positive word of mouth, and especially if it gets the negative word of mouth. So what is wow? Well, here's how I define it. Wow is that gap that exists between your prospect's expectation and his or her experience. Let me just say it again. Wow is the gap that exists between your prospect or customer's expectation and his or her experience. So in other words, if the gap is negative, their experience doesn't live up to their expectation, he or she is disappointed. That's the opposite of wow. That's not wow. But if the gap is positive, his experience exceeds his expectation, he's wowed. That's a wow experience. Now, I first started noticing this a few years ago when Steve Jobs introduced the first iPhone way back in 2007. Hard to believe it's been 5 years. But at first I thought, when I heard about the iPhone, I thought, well, I'm sure Apple will do a great job. I was already a fan by then. But honestly, I can wait until the second generation. I've got a phone that works. I was using a BlackBerry at the time. I'm going to let them work out the bugs first, and then maybe I'll give it a try. But I'm a Steve Jobs fan, so I decided I was going to watch his introduction of the iPhone at Macworld. Apple had it streaming on their website, and I was blown away. And as I tried to deconstruct my experience, I came up with three insights into wow. So let me just share those with you. This is still, by the way, the introduction. This is not the meat of what we're going to talk about in this episode. But the first insight I distilled from that experience of watching Steve introduce the iPhone was that you need to create products you would personally use. So, you know, as I'm watching Steve, you get the sense that he loves the product. He's so familiar with it because he's been using it. And he designed it really for himself. He thinks it's way cool, and he's not afraid to say so. He sprinkles in words, and this is kind of like classic Steve Jobs, but words like awesome and incredible and even magical throughout his speech. I mean, you're kind of caught in the tractor pull of his charisma and lured into that reality distortion zone that people talk about when Steve Jobs is presenting anything. But he exhibits kind of the wonder of a five-year-old on Christmas morning. You really believe him. He's not trying to sell you something. And this is a key part of marketing and platform building. He's just sharing his experience. But he created a product that he would personally use. What about the products you create? What about the products I create? If you're speaking about business, do you deliver exciting and powerful messages that you know can make a difference in people's lives? If you're in sales, do you even use the items you sell? I know I've worked on sales forces where some of the other salespeople wouldn't be caught dead using the product. They just didn't believe in it. But they were happy to kind of gin up some enthusiasm and try to sell it to somebody else. Would you recommend your products enthusiastically to a friend, even if you weren't making money doing it? Do you really love these products, or are you only trying to meet some arbitrary quota or generate revenue? So insight number one I got from that presentation was to create products that you would personally use. Second thing I noticed is, or second insight was to create products that solve problems in unexpected ways. It was really interesting to watch some of the biggest cell phone manufacturers get hammered in the press the week before the iPhone was announced. I mean, you know, everybody's thinking of what Steve is going to deliver as, you know, just another phone. Okay, so Apple's getting in the phone business. Big deal. We've already got the phone. But they have essentially said these other manufacturers were saturated with the product. There's nothing compelling left to build. Investors need to get used to the idea of slower revenue growth, tighter margins. This is going to make it more difficult for the rest of us. But I'm going to tell you, Apple was not content to create a phone that just had additional features. They completely rethought the solution from the ground up. And the thing I loved was that Apple's engineers put themselves in the user's place and refused to be constrained by the past. Man, this is a key clue for the rest of us. They didn't start with the technology. They started with a dream, and that went, and then they went in search of the technology. The technology didn't exist. They went in search of it based on a dream they had for a customer experience. It's a completely different way of doing business. What about you? What about me? Too often, we think inside the box. You know, we let the past constrain us. We don't get in the consumer's shoes and ask, what would make this really outstanding? What would take this to a whole new level? And what would we create if the limits of current technology weren't an issue? You got to get outside of the box and learn to dream again. And some people think they're a little cynical and they think that's a waste of time. I'm telling you, if we're going to create extraordinary products, we've got to recover that childlike wonder and begin to dream again. So insight number two is create products that solve problems in unexpected ways. And then insight number three was to create products that exceed your customers' expectations. As I watched Steve's presentation, I couldn't help but notice the crowd. And I've been to Macworld before, so I've seen this up close and personal when I was part of the crowd. but it's like they're watching this master magician. Steve demonstrates a new feature and the crowd erupts in applause. And I'm telling you, it's authentic. It's genuine. Again, I've been there. But to my surprise, I found myself watching this dumb video on my laptop laughing. I felt like a kid again. Most of all, I wanted one of those stupid iPhones. I mean, it's just a device, right? But I wanted it. Part of the charm is that Apple seems to execute its product vision with such amazing simplicity and elegance. I mean, every icon on the phone is understated, but beautiful. Every feature is easy to use, but it's not complex. And everything seems not only as good as Apple could make it, but as good as Apple could imagine it. That's what I want. What about your products or services? How often have you rushed something to the market with a sigh and a collective, well, I guess that's just going to have to do. It's not great, but it's going to have to do. It's going to have to be good enough. Sadly, we don't start, I'm afraid, with a lofty vision. I'm afraid we become content with mediocrity. We aim low and we execute even lower. But here's my premise for this episode, and that is this, that wow can be engineered. Not perfectly, not every time, but once you understand what wow is, and it's simply a function of exceeding your prospect or customer's expectations, you've got a lot better chance of making it happen. And I believe you can make wow happen by asking and delivering on 5 questions. So let's just take these one at a time. Number one, what is the product or experience I want to create or transform into a wow? Now, look, you can't afford, nor do you have the time or other resources to make everything a wow. You've got to strategically pick what it is you're going to turn into a wow, and it better matter to your customers, your prospects, but identify what it is in the answer to this first question. What is the product or experience I want to create or transform into a wow? And I want to give the example, and it's the example I use in the book platform, but is the corporate lobby. And I went through this process at Thomas Nelson when I became the CEO of thinking through, you know, what's the front line of the customer encounter? Where do people first meet our company or encounter our company? Well, obviously, over the telephone, over the internet, there's a lot of different ways they encounter us. But one is in that lobby experience when they first walk into our building. So in this example, I'm going to use that as the answer to question number one. Question number two, how will the customer or prospect feel as a result of this experience? In other words, what's the specific outcome that you want to create? It's important to begin with the end in mind, as Stephen Covey says in his book, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. So get inside the emotion of that. What do you want the prospect or the customer to feel? And in this case, when they walk into the corporate lobby, and here's how I articulated it when I wrote it down. I said, the customer should feel we must be an extraordinary company because he has never had a lobby experience like this. He assumes we are somehow really different and can't wait to experience more. So a little bit of surprise, a little bit of anticipation, looking forward to a deeper, more engaged experience. So how will the customer or prospect feel as a result of this experience? That's question number two. Question number three, and again, all these I would suggest that you write down when you're going through this exercise, but write these down as a series of bullet points. And here's question three. What specific expectations does the typical customer bring to this experience? This is key. You got to know what the customer's expectations are when they come to your product or service or cause. If you're going to have a chance of exceeding them, you've got to know what they are to begin with. Here's what I wrote down. The lobby should be clean, neat, and well lit. I mean, it's just the average person walking in from the street, their expectations, unconscious perhaps, not expressed perhaps, but here's what they are. The lobby should be clean, neat, and well lit. The receptionist should be friendly and professional. The receptionist will call the appropriate person and notify him he has a visitor. He will be asked to sign in and put on a visitor's name badge. He will be seated while he waits. He'll wait 5 to 10 minutes before being admitted. There'll be a few probably slightly out of date magazines to thumb through. And then the person he's here to see will meet him in the lobby. So, you know, that's pretty much what people expect when they come into a lobby. That's certainly my expectation when I go into a lobby. And that's probably your expectation as well. Question number four, what does failing to meet the customer's expectations for this experience look like? In other words, what happens when this is a disappointment? What happens when they walk in with the set of expectations that I articulated in the last question, but they the expectations are not met. They're disappointed. What does that look like? Well, it could look like this. And again, I wrote these down. The lobby is dirty, messy, or dimly lit. The receptionist is distracted, cold, or rude. And believe me, I met lots of those receptionists who feel like their job is to be, you know, security, not somebody who's welcoming. The receptionist interrogates the customer almost as if she's asking him to prove he has an appointment. He is told or not asked to sign in and handed a cheap adhesive label on which to print his name, but the label keeps falling off his coat. Man, I hate these kind of labels, but we've all had them. There's nowhere to sit or all the seats are occupied. Think Department of Motor Vehicles. You know, if your lobby's like that, you know, you might have a problem. So you have to stand. Another way that another answer to this same question is he may have to wait more than 10 minutes, or there is either nothing to read or the magazines are badly worn and outdated. Another bullet point. He is told where to go and has to navigate a building he's never been in. I've been lost in several buildings because somebody sent me to the person with whom I was supposed to meet, but I didn't have a clue. And frankly, I'm directionally challenged and don't follow directions really well anyway. But at any rate, that's how failing to meet the customer's expectations could look in our lobby example. Question five. Now, this is where it really gets fun and where you can be creative. And I would encourage you to go through with your team this kind of experience, whatever you're looking at, whether it's a product, a service, or whatever, and articulate the answer to all these questions, but especially this one. What does exceeding customers' expectations for this experience look like? Again, the corporate lobby example. Well, the lobby is clean, neat, well-lit, and beautiful. It's decorated with interesting artifacts from the company's history, little cards explaining the significance of each one. A running fountain and a small indoor pool create a soothing oasis from the noise of the street outside. Another bullet. The receptionist title is Director of First Impressions. I actually changed the title of the receptionist at Thomas Nelson to that because I wanted to impress upon her and everyone else that that was her primary responsibility, not security, but making a great first impression. She understands the strategic importance of her job and takes great pride in her role at the company. Another bullet. The receptionist always refers to visitors as guests. The term visitor, you know, implies somebody who doesn't quite belong, that everybody else hopes leaves quickly, but the term guest implies someone who is to be honored, shown hospitality, to be welcomed. Another bullet, the receptionist warmly greets the guest by name. The guest wonders, how did she know that? The receptionist extends her hand and introduces herself. She says, it's so nice to meet you or see you again. We're glad you've come by today. Or it's nice to see you again. The weather is a lot warmer than you were when you were here in March. And by the way, don't get hung up on the technology of how you're going to make this happen. Describe the experience. If you get the vision, you'll figure out how to get it accomplished. Another bullet. She then hands him a pre-printed guest badge. If the guest came in unannounced, she quickly prints a badge. But it's magnetic rather than adhesive or a pin. It sticks to his jacket without damaging the fabric. The guest's first name is in large letters. His last name is printed in smaller letters underneath it. Another bullet. The receptionist asked the guest if he'd care for something to drink. I have bottled water, soda, or freshly brewed Starbucks coffee, she says. If the guest says coffee, the receptionist asks how the guest likes it. The receptionist then says, another bullet, if you would like to have a seat, I'll call Sarah and tell her you are here. I know she's looking forward to seeing you today. While we're waiting for her to come down, I'll get your coffee. Another bullet. The guest sits down on a comfortable chair and notices a selection of the most recent edition of several popular magazines, as well as a few industry journals. In addition, there's a stack of one of our new products, and in our case, it would be books. But a small card next to the stack invites guests to take a copy with our compliments. Again, we're trying to exceed their expectations. Another bullet, the receptionist signs the guest in herself after the guest is seated. This process is completely invisible to the guest. I've always wondered, frankly, why they make you sign in, why somebody can't do that on your behalf. They're just trying to get a log of who's coming and who's going. Last bullet, within 5 minutes, the person with whom the guest has an appointment steps into the lobby and warmly greets the guest. As they leave the lobby, the receptionist says, it was good to meet you, Michael. I look forward to seeing you later. So you get the idea. The fun is in articulating what they expect, to articulate what it looks like when it goes south, you know, when it's not a positive experience. And then finally, to articulate or to engineer the experience, How can we exceed those expectations so they have a wow experience? Because again, the wow is the gap that exists between the person's expectations and their experience. I mean, there's so much more I'd love to say. In fact, at some point, I really want to write an entire book on wow. But in Platform, I have one chapter that's dedicated to the mindset you must develop if you're going to consistently deliver wow. And I have another chapter on the 5 obstacles to wow and what you must do to overcome them. So if that interests you, get the book and read those 2 chapters. But here's the bottom line. If you want to win in today's competitive marketplace, if you want to build a powerful platform, you've got to start with wow. Without it, we can't achieve our full potential. We certainly can't win prospects and satisfy our existing customers. So let's go to a few listener questions. Man, I had a bunch on this topic. I think, I don't know, I had 15 or so. I've got about 8 here, and I'm going to go through them really quickly in the hope of getting as many of them in as we can. The first one comes from Blessing Bofu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
My name is Blessing from Johannesburg, South Africa. My blog is blessingbofu.com. My question is, how do you constantly create new and fresh material to become a thought leader?
That is a great question, Blessing. And I think this is why we've all got to attend to reading and also going to conferences where we're going to be exposed to new content. You know, we've got to be constantly filling the top of the funnel, so to speak, or filling our resource bucket so that we've got something to share with other people. For me, when I'm reading a lot of content, when I'm devouring books, when I'm going to conferences, then when I'm doing things that are relaxing, like running or playing golf or just in the shower, then a lot of those ideas begin for me to sort of ferment and to assemble themselves or reconfigure themselves. And it supplies an endless source of content. But you can't be a thought leader without being a reader. I really believe that. And so if for no other reason, you've got to read in order to be a leader like that. The second question comes from Claire Diaz-Ortiz.
Hi, this is Claire from ClaireDiazOrtiz.com. Congrats again on making Platform a bestseller. I'm calling with a question about how to turn existing blog content into the basis or the early draft of a future published work, specifically a book published through a traditional publisher. I'm wondering about some of the constraints that might exist about it being content that you've already created and sort of some different ways to best approach it. Thanks.
Well, that's a really good question, Claire. When I was at Blogworld, one of the persons who came up at my Oasis autographing was a woman by the name of Nina Amir. I think it's spelled A-M-I-R. And she's got a book out with Writer's Digest Books called How to Blog a Book. I haven't read it, but I saw it reviewed last week by a couple of people that I respect. And I thought, I have got to read that. I can tell you as a publisher, it doesn't matter if it's been published somewhere else before. As long as it's not a book and as long as the rights aren't encumbered, but if it's just been published on your blog, you're fine. I think it's a great way to field test content. It's a way to get reader input. It's a way to more carefully target and polish your content so that it's even more attractive to publishers. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you. The next question comes from JD Smith.
Hi, Mike. JD Smith. jdsmithonline.wordpress.com. Mike, thanks for writing the Platform book. And myself, folks I've given the book to and those who bought it and fed back to me have a pretty consistent question about the wow section. Mike, on the wow section, is it best to platform the wow out of the home base with subcategories of wow out in the outpost, so to speak? And if so, or if not, what would be the best 3 recommendations to build the wow, either about the wow to the author of the wow, or is it wow to the listener of the wow, the audience? If there's any delineation of that, please explain that for us. Thank you so much for the opportunity. God bless.
JD, if I understand your question, you've actually got 2 questions. One is, where should the wow be located, on your home base or in the outposts? And as you know, but for others that don't, when I talk about a home base, I talk about a space in cyberspace that you own and control, where you have 100% control over the messaging and over the branding. And for most people, this is going to be a blog or a podcast or a video channel. regardless, that's where the WOW should be located, because again, you have total control. You don't have as much control in your embassies like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google+, Pinterest. It's not that those shouldn't have their own level of WOW where you're exceeding people's expectations, but the primary focus should be on your home base. The second question, should it be from the author's perspective or the listener or the reader's perspective? It should definitely be from their perspective, not yours as a content creator. I mean, there are a lot of things that I think are WOW. And, you know, if you're independently wealthy and you can afford to just write for yourself, great. I mean, have at it, WOW yourself, and, you know, let the readers take their lumps. But if you really want to reach an audience, if you really want to expand your influence, if you want to monetize your content, you really need to WOW people from their perspective. What are their expectations and how can you exceed them? The next question comes from John Richardson.
Hi, Michael. This is John Richardson from Carlsbad, California. My blog is successbeginstoday.org. I have a question about the power of WOW. I love your new book, but I have had trouble with WOW on my blog at times. I've gone a little too wild sometimes where I put scrolling graphics or some things that I think look really good, but have actually dropped my traffic. Is there a secret to what is good, and is there a such thing as too good? I'd love to hear your answer. Thank you.
John, I hate to be such an Apple fanboy, but I think they're a great example of less is more. You know, they just have this simple elegance in all their design, that where the design doesn't get in the way. And I've seen people do this on blogs. And by the way, I've visited your blog and I read your blog regularly in my RSS. I don't think you go overboard on it. Maybe you have in the past. I don't know, but it seems pretty simple and pretty clean. And I think that's how you want it, because you want to showcase the content. The design should serve the content and not the reverse. I mean, I've been to some incredibly beautiful websites and blogs that I wouldn't subscribe to because the content's not any good. And I'm not subscribing for the design. And by the time I see it in my RSS reader, all the design is stripped out anyway. All I'm getting is the pure content. So I think that's where the majority of our focus needs to be. I do think, and it sounds like you're doing this, you need to pay attention to your readers and to your traffic and to the engagement levels and what they're telling you. Because if you listen carefully, your best customers, your fans, will give you direction and will tell you what you should do. I'm not saying you should be totally guided by that. You've got to have sort of an internal drive and an internal purpose or focus. But I would listen very carefully to my most sincere fans. And if they think it's too much, then I would remove it. But great question. The next question comes from Joseph Lalonde.
Hi, Michael. This is Joseph Lalonde of jmlalonde.com. Calling in to ask you a question about the how of WOW. In your first chapter, you talk about creating products that exceed your customers' expectations. When you're releasing a new product, how do you gauge what the expectations of your customers are? Thank you for taking the time to answer this question. Appreciate all you do.
Well, there's probably a science to this, but I don't know what it is. I mean, apart from doing an incredible survey, you know, and paying a lot of money to do that, maybe you could survey your own customers, but oftentimes your customers don't know what it is that they want. I mean, could have anybody have told Apple if they had surveyed the market, you know, what are you looking for in a phone? No, because all they know is what they know. All they have is what's familiar. They can't tell you what they don't know. So I think the best thing you can do, and this is what I try to do, is just map out their expectations the best I understand them. Maybe use a focus group or a few friends and ask them if there's any other expectations that I've missed. But just try to get something down, something that represents the expectations of the prospects or the customers, because the real juice comes in that next question, or really the fifth question, and that is, how can I exceed those expectations and really surpass them? So I would just, you know, do your best. Don't get too hung up on this, but get something written down as their expectations, and then focus your effort on how you can create a gap between that and the experience that you deliver. The next question comes from Mary DeMuth.
Hi, Mike. This is Mary DeMuth, and I blog at marydemuth.com. And my question is this. In creating WOW, how much does that tie into doing your one thing well. In other words, I think my issue is I have lacked focus over the past 10 years of my career, and I'm getting to that place where I'm focusing on basically one strong message. And so does WOW derive from finding that one passion? And so I'm just curious what you have to say about that. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I think it does. The short answer is the less stuff that you have to focus on, the better you're going to do, the more resources you're going to have to apply to those. I remember reading this book years ago by Reese and Trout called Focus, and it's a great book, by the way. They're the same guys that did Positioning, The Battle for Your Mind. But one of the things they quote in there is an old ancient Chinese proverb, man who chases two rabbits catches neither. And so I think you've got to be careful about spreading yourself too thin. When Steve Jobs came back to Apple after he had been fired and he was away for a few years, and then he came back, Apple had gotten into all kinds of products, and I think there were about 40 or so, and Steve cut the product line back to about 8 because he realized they, even Apple, with all the creative genius that he had and all the engineers that were part of that, they couldn't be so focus themselves too thin and do anything well. So they narrowed the product line and got focused on a few things. And so, yeah, I think generally speaking, the more you can tap into one passion, one focus, the more likely you're going to be to hit WOW. The next question comes from Rebecca Livermore.
Hi, Michael. This is Rebecca Livermore from ProfessionalContentCreation.com. The problem that I'm having when it comes to creating a WOW product is that it seems that all the ideas that I have are really not that creative and unique. I don't have any doubts that I can come up with a quality product, but when it comes to doing something that really makes my product stand out, I'm pretty stumped. So if you could give me some suggestions for how to come up with ideas that haven't been done by a lot of people already, I'd appreciate it.
Rebecca, I get this question a lot, especially in the author world, in the publishing world, where authors wonder, gosh, how can I create an original book, something that's really unique? I would just say this, originality is overrated. It really is. I mean, in the book publishing world, 30 years that I've spent in it, I've seen the same plot in novels over and over again with some variations. In fact, I've got a book on my shelf from Writer's Digest that talks about a fixed number of plots. I mean, there's only like 32 possible plots. Everything else is a variation off of that. Or when you talked about nonfiction books, I mean, how many times can you write on the topic of family or parenting and be original? Here's the key thing. It's going to be unique and original and creative as it's expressed through your personality and through your experiences. So don't sell yourself short. You need to look at the assets that you have, and it's not the originality of the idea, but it's the originality of who you are, and lean into that and tell your experiences and tell your stories. That's what's going to make it unique. The next question comes from Tor Constantino.
Hey, Michael, this is Tor Constantino from the D.C. area. I blog at thedailyretort.com. In your book Platform, you talk about creating a WOW experience. One of the questions that I have is, I try to update my blog daily, and I also work full-time in another job. How do you know that what you're creating has a WOW factor or is going to have a WOW experience for people who visit a blog like that or consume any other sort of content that's generated? So I guess the question is succinctly, if for someone who's trying to create WOW, how do I know it when I've done it? How do I know it's going to have that WOW effect on readers? Thanks so much. Bye.
Tor, this goes back to some of the answers I've already given, and that is it has to be defined in terms of your prospects or your customers. Are they wowed? And in terms of a blog, because that's what you were asking about, I look at my traffic. Is it steadily increasing? I look at my engagement. Are people engaged? And then the content of what they're saying. Are they pleased with it? Are they passing it along? This is where you can look at Facebook shares and retweets. And if you're getting a lot of those, if people think it's something worth sharing, then it's probably because they're being wowed. If you're not getting that, then maybe it's time to take another look at it. I wouldn't say that you should quit too early, because sometimes it just takes some time for that to happen. But I would look at those kind of objective criteria and make sure that they're generally moving in the right direction. That doesn't mean you check those things every day and obsess about your analytics, but it does mean that you look at the trend, see where it's going, and ask yourself the question, what is it telling me? The last question comes from Wanda Ball.
Hi, Michael. My name is Wanda Ball, and I'm calling from Ball, B-A-L-L, -publications.com. I currently write about prosperous Christian living, and after reading your WOW in your book platform and the experiences that your customers or my customers and readers should have, what if my WOW experiences and blog posts are different from what the readers are receiving? And for example, if I'm not receiving comments or feedback from them, how do I know that I need to change my WOW blog posts to something that they would, in a sense, get a WOW experience from? Thank you.
Well, it'd be easy for me to answer this just as I've answered the other ones, and that is look to your listeners, look to your readers, and let them be the judge of the quality of your product. But I want to add something else here. One of the reasons you may not be getting comments, and I've got a whole chapter and platform on this, is because you're not inviting people into the conversation. And I haven't looked at your blog, to be honest, to know whether or not you're doing this, but I talk about some techniques for generating comments, getting more comments, generating more conversation. So I would take a look at that. And it is good that you're asking the question about the quality of your content. Is it WOW or is it not WOW? And you might write just a blog post and ask people that. You know, the more transparent and authentic you can be, the better it's going to be in terms of people bonding to you and having affinity for you and your brand. And that's a little scary, but in this world of social media and transparency, it can really, really help you. So that's about all the time we've got for questions. The one question I want to leave you with, and the question that I'm going to invite you to respond to on my blog, on the show notes, is this one. What is the biggest obstacle you face right now to creating WOW? What's the biggest obstacle you face right now to creating WOW? To comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/016, as in episode 16. michaelhyatt.com/016. Couple of announcements. I've got a platform teleseminar coming up on Tuesday, June the 19th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's free. It's a one-hour teleseminar. I'm going to be talking about the topic of my book, Platform, and I'm going to be answering questions. We've already got over 1,000 people that have registered for that. And if you're going to attend, you must register. Again, it's free, but you've got to register because we have a limit on the bandwidth that we have access to without paying an exorbitant amount of money. So I think we've got a limit of 3,000 people. So let me just encourage you that if you're interested in that, please register. There's a link in the show notes. In terms of my upcoming speaking, I will be speaking this week at the International Shelby Conference in Memphis on June the 14th. I'm doing two sessions there. I'm going to be speaking on the importance of the leader's heart. And then I'm going to be doing a small workshop on how to write a killer blog post, which is going to be a lot of fun. And then I'm also speaking at the American Christian Fiction Writers Conference this fall on September the 21st in Dallas, Texas. And there's a link in the show notes if you want to come to that. But if you're interested in having me speak at your event, go to michaelhyatt.com/speaking. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I would be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, scroll down to the comments section. I'd love to hear from you, comment, question, whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.